Chapter 16. Flesh Foods. The Facts of Faith. 2. 120 to 121. God gave our first parents the food he designed that the race should eat. It was contrary to his plan to have the life of any creature taken. There was to be no death in Eden. The fruit of the trees in the garden was the food man's once required. God gave man no permission to eat animal food until after the flood. Everything had been destroyed upon which man could subsist, and therefore the Lord, in their necessity, gave Noah permission to eat of the clean animals which he had taken with him into the ark. But animal food was not the most healthful article of food for man. The people who lived before the flood ate animal food and gratified their lusts until their cup of iniquity was full, and God cleansed the earth of its moral pollution by a flood. Then the third dreadful curse rested upon the earth. The first curse was pronounced upon the posterity of Adam and upon the earth because of disobedience. The second curse came upon the ground after Cain slew his brother Abel. The third most dreadful curse from God came upon the earth at the flood. After the flood, the people ate largely of animal food. God saw that the ways of man were corrupt, and that he was disposed to exalt himself proudly against his Creator, and to follow the inclinations of his own heart. And he permitted that long-lived race to eat animal food to shorten their sinful lives. Soon after the flood, the race began to rapidly decrease in size and in length of years. There were a class of very large animals which perished at the flood. God knew that the strength of man would decrease, and these mammoth animals could not be controlled by feeble man. The Review and Herald, May 8, 1883, number 19. Healthful Living, 96.1. Meat is not essential for health or strength, else the Lord made a mistake when he provided food for Adam and Eve before their fall. All the elements of nutrition are contained in the fruits, vegetables, and grains. But after the fall, men chose to follow their own sinful desires, and as the result, crime and wretchedness rapidly increased. Neither the marriage relation nor the rights of property were respected. Whoever coveted the wives or the possessions of his neighbor took them by force, and men exulted in their deeds of violence. They delighted in destroying the life of animals, and the use of flesh for food rendered them still more cruel and bloodthirsty, until they came to regard human life with astonishing indifference. As Noah looked upon the powerful beasts of prey that came forth with him from the ark, he feared that his family, numbering only 8 persons, would be destroyed by them. But the Lord sent an angel to his servant with the assuring message, "The fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth, and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things." Before this time, God had given man no permission to eat animal food. He intended that the race should subsist wholly upon the productions of the earth. But now that every green thing had been destroyed, he allowed them to eat the flesh of the clean beasts that had been preserved in the ark. How to Live. 1. 52-53. The human family have been growing more and more self-indulgent, until health has been most successfully sacrificed upon the altar of lustful appetite. The inhabitants of the old world were intemperate in eating and drinking. They would have flesh meats, although God had given them no permission to eat animal food. They ate and drank to excess, and their depraved appetites knew no bounds. They gave themselves up to abominable idolatry. They became violent and ferocious, and so corrupt that God could bear with them no longer. Their cup of iniquity was full, and God cleansed the earth of its moral pollution by a flood. As men multiplied upon the face of the earth after the flood, they forgot God and choked their ways before him. Intemperance in every form increased to a great extent. The Lord brought his people out of Egypt in a victorious manner. He led them through the wilderness to prove them and try them. He repeatedly manifested his miraculous power in their deliverances from their enemies. He promised to take them to himself as his peculiar treasure, if they would obey his voice and keep his commandments. He did not forbid them to eat the flesh of animals, but withheld it from them in a great measure. He provided them food which was the most healthful. He rained their bread from heaven and gave them purest water from the flinty rock. He made a covenant with them, if they would obey him in all things, he would preserve them from disease.
But the Hebrews were not satisfied. They despised the food given them from heaven and wished themselves back in Egypt, where they could sit by the flesh pots. They preferred slavery and even death rather than to be deprived of meat. God, in his anger, gave them flesh to gratify their lustful appetites, and great numbers of them died while eating the meat for which they had lusted. The diet appointed man in the beginning did not include animal food. Not till after the flood, when every green thing on the earth had been destroyed, did man receive permission to eat flesh. In choosing man's food in Eden, the Lord showed what was the best diet. In the choice made for Israel, he taught the same lesson. He brought the Israelites out of Egypt and undertook their training that they might be a people for his own possession. Through them, he desired to bless and teach the world. He provided them with the food best adapted for this purpose, not flesh, but manna, the bread of heaven. It was only because of their discontent and their murmuring for the flesh pots of Egypt that animal food was granted them, and this only for a short time. Its use brought disease and death to thousands. Yet the restriction to a non-flesh diet was never heartily accepted. It continued to be the cause of discontent and murmuring, open or secret, and it was not made permanent. Upon their settlement in Canaan, the Israelites were permitted the use of animal food, but under careful restrictions, which tended to lessen the evil results. The use of swine's flesh was prohibited, as also of other animals and of birds and fish whose flesh was pronounced unclean. Of the meats permitted, the eating of the fat and the blood was strictly forbidden. Only such animals could be used for food as were in good condition. No creature that was torn, that had died of itself, or from which the blood had not been carefully drained, could be used as food. By departing from the plan divinely appointed for their diet, the Israelites suffered great loss. They desired a flesh diet, and they reaped its results. They did not reach God's ideal of character or fulfill his purpose. The Lord gave them their request, but sent leanness into their soul. They valued the earthly above the spiritual, and the sacred preeminence which was his purpose for them, they did not attain. The Facts of Faith 2:15-18. God continued to feed the Hebrew host with the bread rained from heaven, but they were not satisfied. Their depraved appetite craved meat, which God in his wisdom had withheld, in a great measure, from them. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting, and the children of Israel also wept again, and said, "Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers, and the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes." They became weary of the food prepared for them by angels, and sent them from heaven. They knew it was just the food God wished them to have, and that it was healthful for them and their children. Notwithstanding their hardships in the wilderness, there was not a feeble one in all their tribes. Satan, the author of disease and misery, will approach God's people where he can have the greatest success. He has controlled the appetite in a great measure from the time of his successful experiment with Eve in leading her to eat the forbidden fruit. He came with his temptations first to the mixed multitude, the believing Egyptians, and stirred them up to seditious murmurings. They would not be content with the healthful food which God had provided for them. Their depraved appetites craved a greater variety, especially flesh meats. This murmuring soon infected nearly the whole body of the people. At first, God did not gratify their lustful appetites, but caused his judgments to come upon them, and consumed the most guilty by lightning from heaven. Yet this, instead of humbling, only seemed to increase their murmurings. When Moses heard the people weeping in the doors of their tents and complaining throughout their families, he was displeased. He presented before the Lord the difficulties of his situation and the unsubmissive spirit of the Israelites, and the position in which God had placed him to the people, that of a nursing father who should make the sufferings of the people his own. He inquired of the Lord how he could bear this great burden of continually witnessing the disobedience of Israel and hearing their murmurings against his commands and against God himself. He declared before the Lord that he had rather die than see Israel, by their perverseness, drawing down judgments upon themselves, while the enemies of God were rejoicing in their destruction. In his distress, he said, "I am not able to bear all this responsibility alone, because it is too heavy for me."
The Lord directed Moses to gather before him 70 of the elders, whom he knew to be the elders of the people. They were not to be those only in advanced years, but men of dignity, sound judgment, and experience, who were qualified to be judges or officers. "And bring them unto the tabernacle of the congregation, that they may stand there with thee. And I will come down and talk with thee there. And I will take of the Spirit which is upon thee, and will put it upon them. And they shall bear the burden of the people with thee, that thou bear it not thyself alone. And say thou unto the people, Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh. For ye have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, Who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and ye shall eat. Ye shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month, until it come out at your nostrils, and it be loathsome unto you, because that ye have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, Why came we forth out of Egypt? And Moses said, The people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen, and thou hast said, I will give them flesh, that they may eat a whole month. Shall the flocks and herds be slain for them, to suffice them? Or shall all the fish of the sea be gathered together for them, to suffice them? And the Lord said unto Moses, Is the Lord's hand waxed short? Thou shalt see now whether my word shall come to pass unto thee, or not. And there went forth a wind from the Lord, and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and, as it were, 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. And the people stood up all that day, and all that night, and all the next day, and they gathered the quails.
He that gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. In this instance, the Lord gave the people that which was not for their best good, because they would have it. They would not submit to receive from the Lord those things which would prove for their good. They gave themselves up to seditious murmurings against Moses and against the Lord, because they did not receive those things which would prove an injury to them. Their depraved appetites controlled them, and God gave them flesh meats as they desired, and he let them suffer the results of gratifying their lustful appetites. Burning fevers cut down very large numbers of the people. Those who had been most guilty in their murmurings were slain as soon as they tasted the meat for which they had lusted. If they had submitted to have the Lord select their food for them, and had been thankful and satisfied for food which they could eat freely of without injury, they would not have lost the favor of God, and then been punished for their rebellious murmurings by great numbers of them being slain. Christian Temperance and Bible Hygiene, 118-119. When God led the children of Israel out of Egypt, it was his purpose to establish them in the land of Canaan, a pure, happy, healthy people. Let us look at the means by which he would accomplish this. He subjected them to a course of discipline, which, had it been cheerfully followed, would have resulted in good, both to themselves and to their posterity. He removed flesh food from them in a great measure. He had granted them flesh in answer to their clamors just before reaching Sinai, but it was furnished for only one day. God might have provided flesh as easily as manna, but a restriction was placed upon the people for their good. It was his purpose to supply them with food better suited to their wants than the feverish diet to which many of them had been accustomed in Egypt. The perverted appetite was to be brought into a more healthy state, that they might enjoy the food originally provided for man, the fruits of the earth, which God gave to Adam and Eve in Eden. Had they been willing to deny appetite in obedience to his restrictions, feebleness and disease would have been unknown among them. Their descendants would have possessed physical and mental strength. They would have had clear perceptions of truth and duty, keen discrimination, and sound judgment. But they were unwilling to submit to God's requirements, and they failed to reach the standard he had set for them, and to receive the blessings that might have been theirs. They murmured at God's restrictions and lusted after the flesh pots of Egypt. God let them have flesh, but it proved a curse to them. Again and again I have been shown that God is trying to lead us back, step by step, to his original design, that man should subsist upon the natural products of the earth. Among those who are waiting for the coming of the Lord, meat-eating will eventually be done away. Flesh will cease to form a part of their diet. We should ever keep this end in view and endeavor to work steadily toward it. I cannot think that in the practice of flesh-eating we are in harmony with the light which God has been pleased to give us. All who are connected with our health institutions especially should be educating themselves to subsist on fruits, grains, and vegetables. If we move from principle in these things, if we as Christian reformers educate our own taste and bring our diet to God's plan, then we may exert an influence upon others in this matter, which will be pleasing to God. Our habits of eating and drinking show whether we are of the world or among the number whom the Lord, by his mighty cleaver of truth, has separated from the world. These are his peculiar people, zealous of good works. God has spoken in his word. In the case of Daniel and his three companions,
There are sermons upon health reform. God has spoken in the history of the children of Israel, from whom, for their good, he sought to withhold a flesh diet. He fed them with bread from heaven. Man did eat angels' food. But they encouraged their earthly appetite, and the more they centered their thoughts upon the flesh pots of Egypt, the more they hated the food which God gave them to keep them in health physically, mentally, and morally. They longed for the flesh pots, and in this they did just as many in our own time have done. The Facts of Faith 2, 153-154. I have thought for years that I was dependent upon a meat diet for strength. I have eaten 3 meals a day until within a few months. It has been very difficult for me to go from one meal to another without suffering from faintness at the stomach and dizziness of the head. Eating would remove these feelings. I seldom allowed myself to eat anything between my regular meals, and have made it a practice to often retire without supper. But I have suffered greatly for want of food from breakfast to dinner, and have frequently fainted. Eating meat removed, for the time, these faint feelings. I therefore decided that meat was indispensable in my case. But since the Lord presented before me, in June 1863, the subject of meat eating in relation to health, I have left the use of meat. For a while it was rather difficult to bring my appetite to bread, for which, formerly, I have had but little relish. But by persevering, I have been able to do this. I have lived for nearly 1 year without meat. For about 6 months, most of the bread upon our table has been unleavened cakes made of unbolted wheatmeal and water and a very little salt. We use fruits and vegetables liberally. I have lived for 8 months upon 2 meals a day. I have applied myself to writing the most of the time for above a year. For 8 months have been confined closely to writing. My brain has been constantly taxed, and I have had but little exercise. Yet my health has never been better than for the past 6 months. My former faint and dizzy feelings have left me. I have been troubled every spring with loss of appetite. The last spring I had no trouble in this respect. Our plain food, eaten twice a day, is enjoyed with a keen relish. We have no meat, cake, or rich food upon our table. We use no lard, but in its place, milk, cream, and some butter. We have our food prepared with but little salt, and have dispensed with spices of all kinds. We breakfast at 7 and take our dinner at 1. It is seldom I have a faint feeling. My appetite is satisfied. My food is eaten with a greater relish than ever before. Nearly 40 years ago, the Lord opened up before us the principles of health reform. At that time, I was very weak physically. Sometimes I would faint away 2 or 3 times a day, and I thought, as many today think, that flesh meat was the only food that would keep up my strength. But in mercy, the Lord showed me that flesh meat is not necessary to maintain strength, and that it is not the best food. Since that time, increased light upon health reform has been given. In grains, fruits, and vegetables, and nuts, are to be found all the food elements that we need. If we will come to the Lord in simplicity of mind, He will teach us how to prepare wholesome food free from the taint of flesh meat. When the meat-eating question was presented before me 5 years ago, showing how little the people knew what they were eating for food in the shape of flesh meats, this transaction of yours was shown. The effect of eating the meat of these unhealthy animals is diseased blood, sickness, and fevers.
those who have received instruction regarding the evils of the use of flesh foods, tea and coffee, and rich and unhealthful food preparations, and who are determined to make a covenant with God by sacrifice, will not continue to indulge their appetite for food that they know to be unhealthful. God demands that the appetite be cleansed and that self-denial be practiced in regard to those things which are not good. This is a work that will have to be done before His people can stand before Him, a perfected people. File 48, 1902. Those who claim to believe the truth are to guard carefully the powers of body and mind so that God and His cause will not be in any way dishonored by their words or actions. The habits and practices are to be brought into subjection to the will of God. We are to give careful attention to our diet. It has been clearly presented to me that God's people are to take a firm stand against meat eating. Would God for 30 years give His people the message that if they desire to have pure blood and clear minds, they must give up the use of flesh meat, if He did not want them to heed this message? By the use of flesh meats, the animal nature is strengthened and the spiritual nature weakened. Such men as you, who are engaged in the most solemn and important work ever entrusted to human beings, need to give special heed what they eat. Remember that when you eat flesh meat, you are but eating grains and vegetables secondhand, for the animal receives from these things the nutrition that makes it grow and prepares it for market. The life that was in the grains and vegetables passes into the animal and becomes part of its life, and then human beings eat the animal. Why are they so willing to eat their food secondhand? In the beginning, fruit was pronounced by God as good for food. The permission to eat flesh meat was a consequence of the fall. Not till after the flood was man given permission to eat the flesh of animals. Why then need we eat flesh meat? Few who eat this know how full it is of disease. Flesh meat never was the best food, and now it is cursed by disease. The thought of killing animals to be eaten is in itself revolting. If man's natural sense had not been perverted by the indulgence of appetite, human beings would not think of eating the flesh of animals. We have been given the work of advancing health reform. The Lord desires His people to be in harmony with one another. As you must know, we shall not leave the position in which, for the last 35 years, the Lord has been bidding us stand. Beware how you place yourself in opposition to the work of health reform. It will go forward, for it is the Lord's means of lessening the suffering in our world and of purifying His people. Be careful what attitude you assume, lest you be found causing division. My brother, even while you fail to bring into your life and into your family the blessing that comes from following the principles of health reform, do not harm others by opposing the light God has given on this subject. While we do not make the use of flesh meat a test, while we do not want to force anyone to give up its use, yet it is our duty to request that no minister of the conference shall make light of or oppose the message of reform on this point. If, in the face of the light God has given concerning the effect of meat eating on the system, you will still continue to eat meat, you must bear the consequences. But do not take a position before the people that will permit them to think that it is not necessary to call for a reform in regard to meat eating, because the Lord is calling for a reform. The Lord has given us the work of proclaiming the message of health reform. And if you cannot step forward in the ranks of those who are giving this message, you are not to make this prominent. In counterworking the efforts of your fellow laborers who are teaching health reform, you are out of order, working on the wrong side. If things were as they should be in the households that make up our churches, we might do double service for the Lord. The light given me
is that a most decided message must be borne in regard to health reform. Those who use flesh meat strengthen the lower propensities and prepare the way for disease to fasten upon them. There are those among Seventh-day Adventists who will not heed the light given them in regard to this matter. They make flesh meat a part of their diet. Disease comes upon them. Sick and suffering as a result of their own wrong course, they ask for the prayers of the servants of God. But how can the Lord work in their behalf when they are not willing to do His will, when they refuse to heed His instruction in regard to health reform?
For 30 years, the light on health reform has been coming to the people of God, but many have made it a subject of jest. They have continued to use tea, coffee, spices, and flesh meat. Their bodies are full of disease. How can we, I ask, present such ones to the Lord for healing? Tract regarding the use of flesh foods, 8-page tract. Many thoughts crowd into my mind, and I wish to express some of them to you. I have been calling to mind the light God has given me on health reform. Have you carefully and prayerfully sought to understand the will of God in these matters? The excuse has been that the outsiders would have a meat diet. I know that with care and skill, dishes could be prepared to take the place of meat in a large degree. But if one whose main dependence is meat performs the cooking, she can encourage meat eating, and the depraved appetite will frame every kind of excuse for this kind of diet. Meat seldom appears on my table. For weeks at a time I would not taste it, and after my appetite had been trained, I grew stronger and could do better work. When I came to blank, I determined not to taste meat, but I could get scarcely anything else to eat. I therefore ate a little meat. It caused an unnatural action of the heart. I knew it was not the right kind of food. The use of meat while at blank awakened the old appetite, and after I returned home, it clamored for indulgence. Then I resolved to change entirely, and not to eat meat under any circumstances, and thus encourage this appetite. Not a morsel of meat or butter has been on my table since I returned. We have milk, fruit, grains, and vegetables. For a time, I lost all desire for food. Like the children of Israel, I hankered after flesh meats, but I firmly refused to have meat bought or cooked. I was weak and trembling, as everyone who subsists on meat will be when deprived of the stimulus. But now my appetite has returned. I enjoy bread and fruit. My head is generally clear and my strength firmer. I have none of the goneness so common with meat eaters. I have had my lesson, and, I hope, learned it well. Hot biscuits and flesh meats are entirely out of harmony with health reform principles. If we would allow reason to take the place of impulse and love of sensual indulgence, we should not taste of the flesh of dead animals. What is more repulsive to the sense of smell than a shop where flesh meats are kept for sale? The smell of the raw flesh is offensive to all whose senses have not been depraved by culture of the unnatural appetites. What more unpleasant sight to a reflective mind than the beasts slain to be devoured? If the light God has given in regard to health reform is disregarded, He will not work a miracle to keep in health those who pursue a course to make themselves sick. You may think you cannot work without meat. I thought so once, but I know that in His original plan, God did not provide for the flesh of dead animals to compose the diet of man. It is a grossly perverted taste that will accept such food. To think of dead flesh rotting in the stomach is revolting. Then the fact that meat is largely diseased should lead us to make strenuous efforts to discontinue its use entirely. My position now is to let meat altogether alone. It will be hard for some to do this, as hard as for the rum drinker to forsake his dram, but they will be better for the change. August 30, 1896. I was somewhat surprised at your argument as to why a meat-eating diet kept you in strength, for, if you put yourself out of the question, your reason will teach you that a meat diet is not of as much advantage as you suppose. You know how you would answer a tobacco devotee if he urged, as a plea for the use of tobacco, the arguments you have advanced as a reason why you should continue the use of flesh of dead animals as food. The weakness you experience without the use of meat is one of the strongest arguments I could present to you as a reason why you should discontinue its use. Those who eat meat feel stimulated after eating this food, and they suppose they are made stronger. After one discontinues the use of meat, he may for a time feel a weakness, but when his system is cleansed from the effect of this diet, he no longer feels the weakness and will cease to wish for that which he has pleaded for as essential to his strength. I have a large family, which often numbers 16. In it, there are men who work at the plow and who fell trees. These men have vigorous exercise, but not a particle of flesh of animals is placed upon our table. Meat has not been used by us since the Brighton camp meeting, held in 1894. It was not my purpose to have it on my table at any time, but urgent pleas were made that such an one was unable to eat this or that, and that his stomach could take care of meat better than it could of anything else. Then I was enticed to place it on my table. The use of cheese also began to creep in, because some liked cheese, but I soon controlled that. But when the selfishness of taking the lives of animals to gratify a perverted appetite was presented to me by a Catholic woman kneeling at my feet, I felt ashamed and distressed. I saw it in a new light, and I said, "I will no longer patronize the butcher. I will not have the flesh of corpses on my table." I have felt urged by the Spirit of God to set before several the fact that their suffering ill health was caused by a disregard of the light given them upon health reform. I have shown them that their meat diet, which was supposed to be essential, was not necessary, and that, as they were composed of what they ate, brain, bone, and muscle were in an unwholesome condition because they lived on the flesh of dead animals. That their blood was being corrupted by this improper diet, that the flesh which they ate was diseased, and their entire system was becoming gross and corrupted. There is an alarming lethargy shown on the subject of unconscious sensualism. It is customary to eat the flesh of dead animals. This stimulates the lower passions of the human organism. In the preparation of food, the golden rays of light are to be kept shining, teaching those who sit at the table how to live. Physicians are not employed to prescribe a flesh diet for patients, for it is this kind of diet that has made them sick. Seek the Lord. When you find him, you will be meek and lowly of heart. Individually, you will not subsist upon the flesh of dead animals, neither will you put one morsel in the mouths of your children. You will not prescribe flesh, tea, or coffee for your patients, but will give talks in the parlor showing the necessity of a simple diet. You will cut away injurious things from your bill of fare. To have the physicians of our institutions educating by precept and example those under their care to use a meat diet, after years of instruction from the Lord, disqualifies them to be superintendents of our health institutes. The Lord does not give light on health reform that it may be disregarded by those who are in positions of influence and authority. The Lord means just what he says, and he is to be honored in what he says. Light is to be given upon these subjects. It is the diet question that needs close investigation, and prescriptions should be made in accordance with health principles. November 5, 1891, 1896. The Lord intends to bring his people back to live upon simple fruits, vegetables, and grains. He led the children of Israel into the wilderness, where they could not get a flesh diet, and he gave them the bread of heaven. Men did eat angels' food, but they craved the flesh pots of Egypt, and mourned and cried for flesh, notwithstanding that the Lord had promised them, if they would submit to his will, he would carry them into the land of Canaan and establish them there, a pure, holy, happy people, and there should not be a feeble one in all their tribes, for he would take away all sickness from among them. But although they had a plain, "Thus saith the Lord," they mourned and wept and murmured and complained until the Lord was wroth with them, and because they were so determined to have the flesh of dead animals, he gave them the very diet he had withheld from them. The Lord would have given them flesh if it had been essential for their health. But he created and redeemed them, and led them a long journey in the wilderness to educate and discipline and train them into correct habits. The Lord understood what the influence of flesh eating is upon the human system. He would have a people that would, in their physical appearance, bear the divine credentials, notwithstanding their long journey. When I read your letter, I was forcibly reminded of the complainings of the children of Israel because they were not favored with a meat diet. The diet of animals is vegetables and grains. Must the vegetables be animalized? Must they be incorporated into the system before you can get them? Must we obtain our vegetable diet by eating the flesh of dead creatures?
God provided fruit in its natural state for our first parents. He gave Adam charge of the garden to dress it and to care for it, saying, "To you it shall be for meat. One animal shall not destroy another for food." After the fall, the eating of flesh was suffered in order to shorten the period of the existence of the long-lived race. It was allowed because of the hardness of the hearts of men. One of the great errors that many insist upon is that muscular strength is dependent upon animal food. But the simple grains, fruits of the trees and vegetables, have all the nutritive properties necessary to make good blood. This a flesh diet cannot do. When a limb is broken, physicians recommend their patients not to eat meat, as there will be danger of inflammation setting in. My brother, after all the light that has been given on the diet question, your lamentations because you cannot exercise freedom in meat eating is apparently similar to the complainings, lamentations, and weeping of the children of Israel in the ears of the Lord. Our sanitariums should never be conducted after the fashion of the hotel. A meat diet changes the disposition and strengthens animalism. We are composed of what we eat, and eating much flesh will diminish intellectual activity. Students would accomplish much more in their studies if they never tasted meat. When the animal part of the human agent is strengthened by meat eating, the intellectual powers diminish proportionately. A religious life can be more successfully gained and maintained if meat is discarded, for this diet stimulates into intense activities lustful propensities and enfeebles the moral and spiritual nature. The flesh warreth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. We greatly need to encourage and cultivate pure, chaste thoughts, and to strengthen the moral powers rather than the lower and carnal powers. God help us to break from our self-indulgent appetites. The idea of eating dead flesh is abhorrent to me. The thought of one living animal eating the flesh of another animal is shocking. There is no call for it. All your excuses made in regard to faintness is an argument why you should eat no more meat. Cancers, tumors, and all inflammatory diseases are largely caused by meat eating. From the light God has given me, the prevalence of cancer and tumors is largely due to gross living on dead flesh. I sincerely and prayerfully hope that, as a physician, you will not forever be blind on this subject,
for blindness is mingled with the want of moral courage to deny our appetite, to lift the cross, which means to take up the very duties which cut across the natural passions. Feeding on flesh, the juices and fluids of what you eat pass into the circulation of your blood, and, as we are composed of what we eat, we become animalized. Thus, a feverish condition is created, because the animals are diseased, and by partaking of their flesh, we plant the seeds of disease in our own tissue and blood. Then, when exposed to the changes in a malarious atmosphere, these are more sensibly felt. Also, when we are exposed to prevailing epidemics and contagious diseases, the system is not in condition to resist the disease. I have the subject presented to me in different aspects. The mortality caused by meat eating is not discerned. If it were, we would hear no more arguments and excuses in favor of the indulgence of the appetite for dead flesh. We have plenty of good things to satisfy hunger without bringing corpses upon our table to compose our bill of fare. I might go to any length upon this subject, but I forbear. I do hope that you, as a physician, will not, by precept and example, counterwork that which the Lord has given me to enlighten minds and bring in thorough reforms. I am working earnestly along these lines, and shall never cease working against the practice of meat eating. I have had opened before me the stumbling block which this diet question has been in your own spiritual advancement. And what a stumbling block you have placed in the paths of others, and all because your own sensibilities were blunted through the selfish gratification of appetite. For Christ's sake, look deeper, study deeper, and act in accordance with the light God has been pleased to give you and others on this subject. A positive injury is done to the system by continuous meat eating. There is no excuse for it but a depraved, perverted appetite. You may ask, would you do away entirely with meat eating? I answer, it will eventually come to this, but we are not prepared for this step just now. Meat eating will eventually be done away. The flesh of animals will no longer compose a part of our diet, and we shall look upon a butcher's shop with disgust. Again and again I have been shown that God is bringing His people back to His original design. That is not to subsist upon the flesh of dead animals. He would have us teach people a better way.
We are built up from that which we eat. Shall we strengthen the animal passions by eating animal food? In the place of educating the taste to love this gross diet, it is high time that we were educating ourselves to subsist upon fruits, grains, and vegetables. This is the work of all who are connected with our institutions. Use less and less meat until it is not used at all. If meat is discarded, if the taste is not educated in that direction, if a liking for fruits and grains is encouraged, it will soon be as God in the beginning designed it should be. No meat will be used by His people. When meat is not used as it has been, you will learn a more correct way of cooking and will be able to supply the place of meat with something else. Many healthful dishes can be prepared which are free from grease and from the flesh of dead animals. A variety of simple dishes, perfectly healthful and nourishing, may be provided, aside from meat. Hardy men must have plenty of vegetables, fruits, and grains. Occasionally, some meat may have to be given to outsiders who have so educated their taste that they think that unless they have meat, they cannot keep up their strength. But they will have greater powers of endurance if they abstain from meat than if they subsist largely upon it. The principal objection with physicians and helpers at the health retreat to discarding a meat diet is that they want meat, and then plead they must have meat. Therefore, they encourage its use. But God does not want those who come to the health retreat
educated to live on a flesh diet. By parlor talks and by example, educate in the other direction. This will call for great skill in the preparation of wholesome food. More labor will be required, but nevertheless, it must gradually be done. Use less meat. Let those who do the cooking and those who bear the responsibility educate their own tastes and habits of eating in accordance with the laws of health. We have been going back to Egypt rather than on to Canaan. Shall we not reverse the order of things? Shall we not have plain, wholesome food on our tables? Shall we not dispense with hot biscuits, which only cause dyspepsia? Those who elevate the standard as nearly as they can to the order of God, according to the light God has given them through His Word and the testimonies of His Spirit, will not change their course of action to meet the wishes of their friends or relatives, be they one or two or a host, who are living contrary to God's wise arrangement. If we move from principle in these things, if we observe strict rules of diet, if, as Christians, we educate our tastes after God's plan, we shall exert an influence which will meet the mind of God. The question is, are we willing to be true health reformers? I saw that your views concerning swine's flesh, this remarkable testimony was written October 21, 1858, nearly 5 years before the great vision of 1863, in which the light upon health reform was given. When the right time came, the subject was given in a manner to move all our people. How wonderful are the wisdom and goodness of God! It might be as wrong to crowd the milk, salt, and sugar question now as the pork question in 1858. J.W., Note to Second Edition. Would prove no injury if you have them to yourselves, but in your judgment and opinion, you have made this question a test, and your actions have plainly shown your faith in this matter. If God requires His people to abstain from swine's flesh, He will convict them on the matter. He is just as willing to show His honest children their duty as to show their duty to individuals upon whom He has not laid the burden of His work. If it is the duty of the church to abstain from swine's flesh, God will discover it to more than two or three. He will teach His church their duty. Christian Temperance and Bible Hygiene, 47-48. Those who use flesh meats freely do not always have an unclouded brain and an active intellect, because the use of the flesh of animals tends to cause a grossness of body and to benumb the finer sensibilities of the mind. The liability to disease is increased by flesh eating. We do not hesitate to say that meat is not essential to the maintenance of health and strength.
Those who subsist largely upon meat cannot avoid sometimes eating flesh, which is more or less diseased. In many cases, the process of fitting animals for market produces an unhealthy condition. Shut away from light and pure air, inhaling the atmosphere of filthy stables, the entire body soon becomes contaminated with foul matter, and when such flesh is received into the human body, it corrupts the blood and disease is produced. If the person already has impure blood, this unhealthful condition will be greatly aggravated. But few can be made to believe that it is the meat they have eaten which has poisoned their blood and caused their suffering. Many die of diseases wholly due to meat eating, when the real cause is scarcely suspected by themselves or others. Some do not immediately feel its effects, but this is no evidence that it does not hurt them. It may be doing its work surely upon the system, yet for the time being, the victim may realize nothing of it. Pork, although one of the most common articles of diet, is one of the most injurious. God did not prohibit the Hebrews from eating swine's flesh merely to show His authority,
but because it is not a proper article of food for man. God never created the swine to be eaten under any circumstances. It is impossible for the flesh of any living creature to be healthful when filth is its natural element and when it feeds upon every detestable thing. It is not the chief end of man to gratify his appetite. There are physical wants to be supplied, but because of this, is it necessary that man shall be controlled by appetite? Will the people who are seeking to become holy, pure, refined, that they may be introduced into the society of heavenly angels, continue to take the life of God's creatures and enjoy their flesh as a luxury? From what the Lord has shown me, this order of things will be changed, and God's peculiar people will exercise temperance in all things. How to Live 1. 58-59. The first great evil was intemperance in eating and drinking. Men and women have made themselves slaves to appetite. Pork, although one of the most common articles of diet, is one of the most injurious. God did not prohibit the Hebrews from eating swine's flesh merely to show his authority, but because it was not a proper article of food for man. It would fill the system with scrofula, and especially in that warm climate, produced leprosy and disease of various kinds. Its influence upon the system in that climate was far more injurious than in a colder climate. But God never designed the swine to be eaten under any circumstances. The heathen used pork as an article of food, and American people have used pork freely as an important article of diet. Swine's flesh would not be palatable to the taste in its natural state. It is made agreeable to the appetite by highly seasoning, which makes a very bad thing worse. Swine's flesh, above all other flesh meats, produces a bad state of the blood. Those who eat freely of pork can but be diseased. Those who have much outdoor exercise do not realize the bad effects of pork eating as those do whose life is mostly indoors and whose habits are sedentary and whose labor is mental. But it is not physical health alone which is injured by pork eating. The mind is affected, and the finer sensibilities are blunted by the use of this gross article of food. It is impossible for the flesh of any living creature to be healthy when filth is their natural element, and when they will feed upon every detestable thing. The flesh of swine is composed of what they eat. If human beings eat their flesh, their blood and their flesh will be corrupted by impurities conveyed to them through the swine. The eating of pork has produced scrofula, leprosy, and cancerous humors. Pork eating is still causing the most intense suffering to the human race. Depraved appetites crave those things which are the most injurious to health. The curse, which has rested heavily upon the earth and has been felt by the whole race of mankind, has also been felt by the animals. The beasts have degenerated in size and length of years. They have been made to suffer more than they otherwise would by the wrong habits of man. Disease has been transmitted to your offspring, and the free use of flesh meats has increased the difficulty. The eating of pork has aroused and strengthened a most deadly humor which was in the system. Your offspring are robbed of vitality before they are born. You have not added to virtue knowledge, and your children have not been taught how to preserve themselves in the best condition of health. Never should one morsel of swine's flesh be placed upon your table.
God has given you light and knowledge, which you have professed to believe came direct from Him, instructing you to deny appetite. You know that the use of swine's flesh is contrary to His express command, given not because He wished to especially show His authority, but because it would be injurious to those who should eat it. Its use would cause the blood to become impure, so that scrofula and other humors would corrupt the system and the whole organism would suffer. especially would the fine, sensitive nerves of the brain become enfeebled and so beclouded that sacred things would not be discerned, but be placed upon the low level with common things. Light, showing that disease is caused by using this gross article of food, has come just as soon as God's people could bear it. Have you heeded the light? I present the word of the Lord God of Israel. Because of transgression, the curse of God has come upon the earth itself, and upon the cattle, and upon all flesh. Human beings are suffering the result of their own course of action in departing from the commandments of God. The beasts also suffer under the curse. Meat eating should not come into the prescription for any invalids from any physicians from among those who understand these things. Disease in cattle is making meat eating a dangerous matter. The Lord's curse is upon the earth, upon man, upon beasts, upon the fish of the sea. And as transgression becomes almost universal, the curse will be permitted to become as broad and as deep as the transgression. Disease is contracted by the use of meat. The diseased flesh of these dead carcasses is sold in the marketplaces, and disease among men is the sure result. The Lord would bring his people into a position where they will not touch or taste the flesh of dead animals. Then let not these things be prescribed by any physicians who have a knowledge of the truth for this time. There is no safety in the eating of the flesh of dead animals, and in a short time the milk of the cows will also be excluded from the diet of God's commandment-keeping people. In a short time, it will not be safe to use anything that comes from the animal creation. Those who take God at his word and obey his commandments with the whole heart will be blessed. He will be their shield of protection. But the Lord will not be trifled with. Distrust, disobedience, alienation from God's will and way will place the sinner in a position where the Lord cannot give him his divine favor. Again, I will refer to the diet question. We cannot now do as we have ventured to do in the past in regard to meat eating. It has always been a curse to the human family, but now it is made particularly so in the curse which God has pronounced upon the herds of the field because of man's transgression and sin. The disease upon animals is becoming more and more common, and our only safety now is in leaving meat entirely alone. The most aggravated diseases are now prevalent, and the very last thing that physicians who are enlightened should do is to advise patients to eat meat. It is in eating meat so largely in this country that men and women are becoming demoralized, their blood corrupted, and disease planted in the system. Because of meat eating, many die, and they do not understand the cause. If the truth were known, it would bear testimony it was the flesh of animals that has passed through death. The thought of feeding on dead flesh is repulsive, but there is something besides this. In eating meat, we partake of diseased dead flesh, and this sows its seed of corruption in the human organism. Could you know just the nature of the meat you eat? Could you see the animals when living from which the flesh is taken when dead? You would turn with loathing from your flesh meats. The very animals whose flesh you eat are frequently so diseased that, if left alone, they would die of themselves. But while the breath of life is in them, they are killed and brought to market. You take directly into your system humors and poison of the worst kind, and yet you realize it not. You love to indulge appetite. You have this lesson to learn. Whether therefore ye eat or drink
or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. The Facts of Faith, 2:146-148. In order to preserve health, temperance in all things is necessary. Temperance in labor, temperance in eating and drinking. Because of intemperance, a great amount of misery has been brought upon the human family. The eating of pork has produced scrofula, leprosy, and cancerous humors. Pork eating is still causing the most intense suffering to the human race. Depraved appetites crave those things which are most injurious to health. The curse, which has rested heavily upon the earth and has been felt by the whole race of mankind, has also been felt by the animals. The beasts have degenerated in size and length of years. They have been made to suffer more than they otherwise would by the wrong habits of man.
There are but a few animals that are free from disease. They have been made to suffer greatly for the want of light, pure air, and wholesome food. When they are fattened, they are often confined in close stables and are not permitted to exercise and to have free circulation of air. Many poor animals are left to breathe the poison of filth which is left in barns and stables. Their lungs will not long remain healthy while inhaling such impurities. Disease is conveyed to the liver, and the entire system of the animal is diseased. They are killed and prepared for the market, and people eat freely of this poisonous animal food. Much disease is caused in this manner, but people cannot be made to believe that it is the meat that they have eaten which has poisoned their blood and caused their sufferings. Many die of disease caused wholly by meat eating, yet the world does not seem to be the wiser. Animals are frequently killed that have been driven quite a distance for the slaughter. Their blood has become heated. They are full of flesh and have been deprived of healthy exercise, and when they have to travel far, they become surfeited and exhausted, and in that condition are killed for market. Their blood is highly inflamed, and those who eat of their meat eat poison. Some are not immediately affected, while others are attacked with severe pain and die from fever, cholera, or some unknown disease. Very many animals are sold for the city market known to be diseased by those who have sold them, and those who buy them are not always ignorant of the matter. Especially in larger cities, this is practiced to a great extent, and meat eaters know not that they are eating diseased animals. Some animals that are brought to the slaughter seem to realize by instinct what is to take place, and they become furious and literally mad. They are killed while in that state, and their flesh prepared for the market. Their meat is poison, and has produced, in those who have eaten it, cramps, convulsions, apoplexy, and sudden death. Yet the cause of all this suffering is not attributed to the meat. Some animals are inhumanly treated while being brought to the slaughter. They are literally tortured, and after they have endured many hours of extreme suffering, are butchered. Swine have been prepared for market even while the plague was upon them, and their poisonous flesh has spread contagious diseases, and great mortality has followed. Unpublished Testimonies, November 5, 1896. Healthful Living, 97.2. The diet of animals is vegetables and grains. Must the vegetables be animalized? Must they be incorporated into the system of an animal before we get them? Must we obtain our vegetable diet by eating the flesh of dead creatures? God provided food in its natural state for our first parents. He gave Adam charge of the garden, to dress it and to care for it, saying, "To you it shall be for meat." One animal was not to destroy another animal for food.
those who eat flesh are but eating grains and vegetables at second hand, for the animal receives from these things the nutrition that produces growth. The life that was in the grains and vegetables passes into the eater. We receive it by eating the flesh of the animal. How much better to get it direct by eating the food that God provided for our use. Flesh was never the best food, but its use is now doubly objectionable, since disease in animals is so rapidly increasing. Those who use flesh foods little know what they are eating. Often, if they could see the animals when living and know the quality of the meat they eat, they would turn from it with loathing. People are continually eating flesh that is filled with tuberculous and cancerous germs. Tuberculosis, cancer, and other fatal diseases are thus communicated. The tissues of the swine swarm with parasites. Of the swine, God said, "It is unclean unto you. Ye shall not eat of their flesh, nor touch their dead carcass." This command was given because swine's flesh is unfit for food. Swine are scavengers, and this is the only use they were intended to serve. Never, under any circumstances, was their flesh to be eaten by human beings. It is impossible for the flesh of any living creature to be wholesome when filth is its natural element and when it feeds upon every detestable thing. Often, animals are taken to market and sold for food when they are so diseased that their owners fear to keep them longer. And some of the processes of fattening them for market produce disease. Shut away from the light and pure air, breathing the atmosphere of filthy stables, perhaps fattening on decaying food, the entire body soon becomes contaminated with foul matter. Animals are often transported long distances and subjected to great suffering in reaching a market. Taken from the green pastures and traveling for weary miles over the hot, dusty roads, or crowded into filthy cars, feverish and exhausted, often for many hours deprived of food and water, the poor creatures are driven to their death, that human beings may feast on the carcasses. In many places, fish become so contaminated by the filth on which they feed as to be a cause of disease. This is especially the case where the fish come in contact with the sewage of large cities. The fish that are fed on the contents of the drains may pass into distant waters and may be caught where the water is pure and fresh. Thus, when used as food, they bring disease and death on those who do not suspect the danger. The effect of a flesh diet may not be immediately realized, but this is no evidence that it is not harmful. Few can be made to believe that it is the meat they have eaten which has poisoned their blood and caused their suffering. Many die of diseases wholly due to meat eating, while the real cause is not suspected by themselves or by others. The moral evils of a flesh diet are not less marked than are the physical ills. Flesh food is injurious to health, and whatever affects the body has a corresponding effect on the mind and the soul. Think of the cruelty to animals that meat eating involves, and its effect on those who inflict and those who behold it. How it destroys the tenderness with which we should regard the creatures of God. Unpublished Testimonies, August 30, 1896. Healthful Living, 98.5. The weakness experienced on leaving off meat is one of the strongest arguments that I could present as a reason why you should discontinue its use. Those who eat meat feel stimulated after eating this food, and they suppose that they are made stronger. After they discontinue the use of meat, they may for a time feel weak, but when the system is cleansed from the effect of this diet, they no longer feel the weakness, and will cease to wish for which they have pleaded as essential to strength. It is a mistake to suppose that muscular strength depends on the use of animal food.
The needs of the system can be better supplied, and more vigorous health can be enjoyed without its use. The grains, with fruits, nuts, and vegetables, contain all the nutritive properties necessary to make good blood. These elements are not so well or so fully supplied by a flesh diet. Had the use of flesh been essential to health and strength, animal food would have been included in the diet appointed man in the beginning. When the use of flesh food is discontinued, there is often a sense of weakness, a lack of vigor. Many urge this as evidence that flesh food is essential. But it is because foods of this class are stimulating, because they fever the blood and excite the nerves, that they are so missed. Some will find it as difficult to leave off flesh eating as it is for the drunkard to give up his dram, but they will be the better for the change. When flesh food is discarded, its place should be supplied with a variety of grains, nuts, vegetables, and fruits that will be both nourishing and appetizing. This is especially necessary in the case of those who are weak or who are taxed with continuous labor. In some countries, where poverty abounds, flesh is the cheapest food. Under these circumstances, the change will be made with greater difficulty, but it can be effected. We should, however, consider the situation of the people and the power of lifelong habit, and should be careful not to urge even right ideas unduly. None should be urged to make the change abruptly. The place of meat should be supplied with wholesome foods that are inexpensive. In this matter, very much depends on the cook. With care and skill, dishes may be prepared that will be both nutritious and appetizing, and will, to a great degree, take the place of flesh food. In all cases, educate the conscience, enlist the will, supply good, wholesome food, and the change will be readily made, and the demand for flesh will soon cease. Is it not time that all should aim to dispense with flesh foods? How can those who are seeking to become pure, refined, and holy, that they may have the companionship of heavenly angels, continue to use as food anything that has so harmful an effect on soul and body? How can they take the life of God's creatures that they may consume the flesh as a luxury? Let them rather return to the wholesome and delicious food given to man in the beginning, and themselves practice, and teach their children to practice, mercy toward the dumb creatures that God has made and has placed under our dominion.
The tables of many professed Christian women are daily set with a variety of dishes which irritate the stomach and produce a feverish condition of the system. Flesh meats constitute the principal article of food upon the tables of some families, until their blood is filled with cancerous and scrofulous humors. Their bodies are composed of what they eat. But when suffering and disease come upon them, it is considered an affliction of providence. Unpublished Testimonies, March 1, 1896. Healthful Living, 67.5. The meat is served reeking with fat because it suits the perverted taste. Both the blood and the fat of animals is consumed as a luxury. But the Lord has given special directions that these should not be eaten. Why? Because their use would make a diseased current of blood in the human system. Disregard of the Lord's special directions has brought a variety of difficulties and diseases upon human beings. If they introduce into their systems that which cannot make good flesh and blood, they must endure the results of the disregard of God's word. The Facts of Faith 2, 129. There is a class who profess to believe the truth who do not use tobacco, snuff, tea, or coffee, yet they are guilty of gratifying the appetite in a different manner. They crave highly seasoned meats with rich gravies, and their appetite has become so perverted that they cannot be satisfied with even meat, unless prepared in a manner most injurious. The stomach is fevered, the digestive organs are taxed, and yet the stomach labors hard to dispose of the load forced upon it. After the stomach has performed its task, it becomes exhausted, which causes faintness. Here, many are deceived, and think that it is the want of food which produces such feelings, and without giving the stomach time to rest, they take more food, which for the time removes the faintness. And the more the appetite is indulged, the more will be its clamors for gratification. This faintness is generally the result of meat eating, and eating frequently, and too much. Intemperance commences at our tables, in the use of unhealthful food. After a time, through continued indulgence, the digestive organs become weakened, and the food taken does not satisfy the appetite. Unhealthy conditions are established, and there is a craving for more stimulating food. Tea, coffee, and flesh meats produce an immediate effect. Under the influence of these poisons, the nervous system is excited, and in some cases, for the time being, the intellect seems to be invigorated and the imagination to be more vivid. Because these stimulants produce for the time being such agreeable results, many conclude that they really need them and continue their use. But there is always a reaction. The nervous system, having been unduly excited, borrowed power for present use from its future resources of strength. All this temporary invigoration of the system is followed by depression. In proportion as these stimulants temporarily invigorate the system, will be the letting down of the power of the excited organs after the stimulus has lost its force. The appetite is educated to crave something stronger, which will have a tendency to keep up and increase the agreeable excitement, until indulgence becomes habits, and there is a continual craving for stronger stimulus, as tobacco, wines, and liquors. Satan is corrupting minds and destroying souls through his subtle temptations. Will our people see and feel the sin of indulging perverted appetite? Will they discard tea, coffee, flesh meats, and all stimulating food, and devote the means expended for these hurtful indulgences to spreading the truth? Some think that they cannot reform, that health would be sacrificed should they attempt to leave the use of tea and flesh meats. This is the suggestion of Satan. It is these hurtful stimulants that are surely undermining the constitution and preparing the system for acute diseases by impairing nature's fine machinery and battering down her fortifications erected against disease and premature decay.
Those who make a change and leave off these unnatural stimulants will, for a time, feel their loss and suffer considerably without them, as does the drunkard who is wedded to his liquor. Take away intoxicating drinks, and he suffers terribly. But if he persists, he will soon overcome the dreadful lack. Nature will come to his aid and remain at her post until he again substitutes the false prop in her place. Some have so benumbed the fine sensibilities of nature that it may require a little time for her to recover from the abuse she has been made to suffer through the sinful habits of man. The indulgence of an acquired, depraved appetite, which has depressed and weakened her powers. Give nature a chance, and she will rally, and again perform her part nobly and well. The use of unnatural stimulants is destructive to health, and has a benumbing influence upon the brain, making it impossible to appreciate eternal things. Those who cherish these idols cannot rightly value the salvation which Christ has wrought out for them by a life of self-denial, continual suffering and reproach, and by finally yielding his own sinless life to save perishing man from death. Children are allowed to eat flesh meats, spices, butter, cheese, pork, rich pastry, and condiments generally.
They are also allowed to eat irregularly and between meals of unhealthful food. These things do their work of deranging the stomach, exciting the nerves to unnatural action, and enfeebling the intellect. Parents do not realize that they are sowing the seed which will bring forth disease and death. The Facts of Faith, 2:132. The lives of many children from 5 to 10 and 15 years of age seem marked with depravity. They possess knowledge of almost every vice. The parents are, in a great degree, at fault in this matter, and to them will be accredited the sins of their children, which their improper course has indirectly led them to commit. They tempt their children to indulge their appetite by placing upon their tables flesh meats and other food prepared with spices, which have a tendency to excite the animal passions. When will those who know the truth take their stand on the side of right principles for time and for eternity? When will they be true to the principles of health reform? When will they learn that it is dangerous to use flesh meat? I am instructed to say that if ever meat eating were safe, it is not safe now. Diseased animals are taken to the large cities and to the villages and sold for food. Many of these poor creatures would have died of disease in a very short time if they had not been slaughtered. Yet the carcasses of these diseased animals are prepared for the market, and people eat freely of this poisonous food. Such a diet contaminates the blood and stimulates the lower passions. Many parents act as if they were bereft of reason. They are in a state of lethargy, palsied by the indulgence of perverted appetite and debasing passion. Our ministers, who know the truth, should arouse the people from the paralyzed condition and lead them to put away those things that create an appetite for flesh meat. If they neglect to reform, they will lose spiritual power and become more and more debased by sinful indulgence. Habits that disgust the heavenly universe, habits that degrade human beings lower than the beasts, are practiced in many homes. Let all those who know the truth say, "Flee fleshly lusts that war against the soul." Let not any of our ministers set an evil example in the eating of flesh meat. Let them and their families live up to the light of health reform. Let not our ministers animalize their own nature and the nature of their children. Children whose desires have not been restrained are tempted not only to indulge in the common habits of intemperance, but to give loose rein to their lower passions and to disregard purity and virtue. These are led on by Satan not only to corrupt their own bodies, but to whisper their evil communications to others. If parents are blinded by sin, they will often fail of discerning these things. To parents who are living in the cities, the Lord is sending the warning cry, "Gather your children into your own houses. Gather them away from those who are disregarding the commandments of God, who are teaching and practicing evil. Get out of the cities as fast as possible." Parents can secure small homes in the country with land for cultivation, where they can have orchards and where they can raise vegetables and small fruits to take the place of flesh meat, which is so corrupting the life blood coursing through the veins. The church in general at Battle Creek have not sustained the Institute by their example. They have not honored the light of health reform by carrying it out in their families. The sickness that has visited many families in Battle Creek need not have been, if they had followed the light God has given them. Like ancient Israel, they have disregarded the light and could see no more necessity of restricting their appetite than did ancient Israel. The children of Israel would have flesh meats, and said, as many now say, "We shall die without meat." God gave rebellious Israel flesh, but his curse was with it.
thousands of them died while the meat they desired was between their teeth. We have the example of ancient Israel and the warning for us not to do as they did. Their history of unbelief and rebellion is left on record as a special warning that we should not follow their example of murmuring at God's requirements. How can we pass on so indifferently, choosing our own course, following the sight of our own eyes, and departing farther and farther from God, as did the Hebrews? God cannot do great things for His people because of their hardness of heart and sinful unbelief. One family in particular have needed all the benefits they could receive from the reform in diet. Yet these very ones have been completely backslidden. Meat and butter have been used by them quite freely, and spices have not been entirely discarded. This family could have received great benefit from a nourishing, well-regulated diet. The head of the family needed plain, nutritious food. His habits were sedentary, and his blood moved sluggishly through the system. He could not, like others, have the benefit of healthful exercise. Therefore, his food should have been of the right quality and quantity. There has not been in this family the right management in regard to diet. There has been irregularity. There should have been a specified time for each meal, and the food should have been prepared in a simple form and free from grease. But pains should have been taken to have it nutritious, healthful, and inviting. In this family, as also in many others, a special parade has been made for visitors. Many dishes prepared and frequently made too rich, so that those seated at the table would be tempted to eat to excess. Then, in the absence of company, there was a great reaction, a falling off in the preparations brought on the table. The diet was spare and lacked nourishment. It was considered not so much matter just for ourselves. The meals were frequently picked up, and the regular time for eating not regarded. Every member of the family was injured by such management. It is a sin for any of our sisters to make such great preparations for visitors and wrong their own families by a spare diet which will fail to nourish the system. The brother referred to felt a lack in his system. He was not nourished, and he thought that meat would give him the needed strength. Had he been suitably cared for, his table spread at the right time with food of a nourishing quality, all the demands of nature would have been abundantly supplied. The butter and meat stimulate. These have injured the stomach and perverted the taste. The sensitive nerves of the brain have been benumbed, and the animal appetite strengthened at the expense of the moral and intellectual faculties. These higher powers, which should control, have been growing weaker, so that eternal things have not been discerned. Paralysis has benumbed the spiritual and devotional. Satan has triumphed to see how easily he can come in through the appetite and control men and women of intelligence, calculated by the Creator to do a good and great work. The case above referred to is not an isolated one. If it were, I would not introduce it here. When Satan takes possession of the mind, how soon the light and instruction that the Lord has graciously given fade away and have no force. How many frame excuses and make necessities which have no existence to bear them up in their course of wrong in setting aside the light and trampling it underfoot. I speak with assurance. The greatest objection to health reform is that this people do not live it out. And yet, they will gravely say they cannot live the health reform and preserve their strength.
We find in every such instance a good reason why they cannot live out the health reform. They do not live it out, and have never followed it strictly. Therefore,
they cannot be benefited by it. Some fall into the error that because they discard meat, they have no need to supply its place with the best fruits and vegetables, prepared in their most natural state, free from grease and spices. If they would only skillfully arrange the bounties with which the Creator has surrounded them, parents and children, with a clear conscience, unitedly engaging in the work, they would enjoy simple food and would then be able to speak understandingly of health reform. Those who have not been converted to health reform and have never fully adopted it are not judges of its benefits. Those who digress occasionally to gratify the taste in eating a fattened turkey or other flesh meats pervert their appetites and are not the ones to judge of the benefits of the system of health reform. They are controlled by taste, not by principle. I was instructed that the use of flesh meat has a tendency to animalize the nature and to rob men and women of the love and sympathy which they should feel for everyone. We are built up from that which we eat, and those whose diet is largely composed of animal food are brought into a condition where they allow the lower passions to assume control of the high powers of the being. I accepted the light on health reform as it came to me. It has been a great blessing to me. I have better health today, notwithstanding I am 76 years old, than I had in my younger days. I thank God for the principles of health reform, and if there are any here today who have backslidden in this respect, I say to them that God calls upon them to be converted and to take their position in accordance with the light He has given. In denying perverted appetite, you will place yourself where God can cooperate with you. We do not mark out any precise line to be followed in diet. There are many kinds of wholesome food. But we do say that flesh meat is not the right food for God's people. It animalizes human beings. In a country such as this, where there are fruits, grains, and nuts in abundance, how can one think that he must eat the flesh of dead animals? Concerning flesh meat, we can all say, "Let it alone." And all should bear clear testimony against tea and coffee, never using them. They are narcotics, injurious alike to the brain and to the other organs of the body. The time has not yet come when I can say that the use of milk and of eggs should be wholly discontinued. Milk and eggs should not be classed with flesh meats. In some ailments, the use of eggs is very beneficial. Let the members of our churches deny every selfish appetite. Every penny expended for tea, coffee, and flesh meat is worse than wasted, for these things hinder the best development of the physical, mental, and spiritual powers. God wants the perceptive faculties of His people to be clear and capable of hard work. But if you are living on a flesh diet, you need not expect that your mind will be fruitful. The thoughts must be cleansed. Then the blessing of God will rest upon His people. We want the pervading truth of God's Word to get hold of every one of our people before this conference is over. We want them to understand that the flesh of animals is not the proper food for them to eat. Such a diet cultivates the animal passions in them and in their children. God wants us to educate our children in right habits of eating, dressing, and working. He wants us to do what we can to repair the broken-down machinery. If ever there was a time when the diet should be of the most simple kind, it is now. Meat should not be placed before our children. Its influence is to excite and strengthen the lower passions, and has a tendency to deaden the moral powers. Your family have partaken largely of flesh meats, and the animal propensities have been strengthened, while the intellectual have been weakened. We are composed of what we eat, and if we subsist largely upon the flesh of dead animals, we shall partake of their nature. You have encouraged the grosser part of your organization, while the more refined has been weakened. You have repeatedly said in defense of your indulgence of meat eating, "However injurious it may be to others, it does not injure me, for I have used it all my life."
but you know not how well you might have been if you had abstained from the use of flesh meats. As a family, you are far from being free from disease. You have used the fat of animals which God in His Word expressly forbids. It shall be a perpetual statute for your generations throughout all your dwellings that ye eat neither fat nor blood. Moreover, ye shall eat no manner of blood, whether it be of fowl or of beast, in any of your dwellings. Whatsoever soul it be that eateth any manner of blood, even that soul shall be cut off from his people.
You have flesh, but it is not good material. You are worse off for this amount of flesh. If you should each come down to a more spare diet, which would take from you 25 or 30 pounds of your gross flesh, you would be much less liable to disease. The eating of flesh meats has made a poor quality of blood and flesh. Your systems are in a state of inflammation, prepared to take on disease. You are liable to acute attacks of disease and to sudden death because you do not possess the strength of constitution to rally and resist disease. There will come a time when the strength and health you have flattered yourself you possessed will prove to be weakness. It is not the chief end of man to glorify his stomach. You have animal wants to be supplied, but because of this necessity shall man become all animal? You have set for your children a table of unwholesome food, cooked in an unhealthful manner. You have placed flesh meats before them, and what is the result? Are they refined, intellectual, obedient, conscientious, and religiously inclined? You know this is not the case, but entirely contrary. Your manner of living has strengthened the animal of your nature and weakened the spiritual. You have transmitted to your children a miserable legacy, a depraved nature rendered still more depraved by your gross habits of eating and drinking. Your table has completed the work of making them what they are. The sin lies at your door. You know that they are not religiously inclined, that they will not submit to restraint, but are inclined to disobedience and to disrespect your authority. Your eldest son especially is corrupt, partaking to a great degree of the animal. Scarcely a trace of the divine can be seen in his organization. You have brought up your children to indulge their appetite when they please and as they please. Your example has taught them that they live to eat, that the gratification of appetite is about all that is worth living for. There is a work for you to do, Brother H. You have been like a man asleep or paralyzed. It is time that you make a mighty effort to save the younger members of your family. The influence of your eldest son is only evil over them. Correct your table. A depraved, stimulating diet is strengthening the animal passions of your children. Of all the families I am acquainted with, yours most needs to dispense with flesh meats and grease and learn to cook hygienically. Sister H is a woman whose blood is corrupt. Her system is full of scrofulous humors from the eating of flesh meats. The use of swine's flesh in your family has imparted a bad quality of blood. Sister H needs to confine herself strictly to a diet of grains, fruits, and vegetables, cooked without flesh or grease of any kind. It will take quite a length of time of strictly healthful diet to place you in better conditions of health, where you will be rightly related to life. It is impossible for those who make free use of flesh meats to have an unclouded brain and an active intellect. After they have reduced their physical strength by a reduced quantity and a poor quality of food, some conclude that their former way of living is the best. The system must be nourished.
Yet we do not hesitate to say that flesh meat is not necessary for health or strength. If used, it is because a depraved appetite craves it. Its use excites the animal propensities to increased activity and strengthens the animal passions. When the animal propensities are increased, the intellectual and moral powers are decreased. The use of the flesh of animals tends to cause a grossness of body and benumbs the fine sensibilities of the mind.
Will the people who are preparing to become holy, pure, and refined, that they may be introduced into the society of heavenly angels, continue to take the life of God's creatures and subsist on their flesh and enjoy it as a luxury? From what the Lord has shown me, this order of things will be changed, and God's peculiar people will exercise temperance in all things. Those who subsist largely upon flesh cannot avoid eating the meat of animals which are to a greater or less degree diseased. The process of fitting animals for market produces in them disease, and fitted in as healthful a manner as they can be, they become heated and diseased by driving before they reach the market. The fluids and flesh of these diseased animals are received directly into the blood and pass into the circulation of the human body, becoming fluids and flesh of the same. Thus, humors are introduced into the system, and if the person already has impure blood, it is greatly aggravated by the eating of the flesh of these animals. The liability to take disease is increased tenfold by meat eating. The intellectual, the moral, and the physical powers are depreciated by the habitual use of flesh meats. Meat eating deranges the system, beclouds the intellect, and blunts the moral sensibilities. We say to you, dear brother and sister, your safest course is to let meat alone. Flesh meats will depreciate the blood. Cook meat with spices and eat it with rich cakes and pies, and you have a bad quality of blood. The system is too heavily taxed in disposing of this kind of food. The mince pies and the pickles, which should never find a place in any human stomach, will give a miserable quality of blood. And a poor quality of food, cooked in an improper manner and insufficient in quantity, cannot make good blood. Flesh meats and rich food and an impoverished diet will produce the same results. There are many minds in many places to whom the Lord will surely give knowledge of how to prepare foods that are healthful and palatable, if He sees that they will use this knowledge righteously. Animals are becoming more and more diseased, and it will not be long until animal food will be discarded by many besides Seventh-day Adventists. Foods that are healthful and life-sustaining are to be prepared so that men and women will not need to eat meat. Vegetables, fruits, and grains should compose our diet. Not an ounce of flesh meat should enter our stomachs. The eating of flesh is unnatural. We are to return to God's original purpose in the creation of man. The large gatherings of our people afford an excellent opportunity of illustrating the principles of health reform. Some years ago at these gatherings, much was said in regard to health reform and the benefits of a vegetarian diet. But at the same time, flesh meats were furnished at the tables in the dining tent, and various unhealthful articles of food were sold at the provision stand. Faith without work is dead, and the instruction upon health reform, denied by practice, did not make the deepest impression. At later camp meetings, those in charge have educated by practice as well as by precept. No meat has been furnished at the dining tent, but fruits, grains, and vegetables have been supplied in abundance. As visitors ask questions in regard to the absence of meat, the reason is plainly stated, that flesh is not the most healthful food. There are some in our institutions who claim to believe the principles of health reform
and yet who indulge in the use of flesh meats and other foods which they know to be injurious to health. I say to such in the name of the Lord, do not accept positions in our institutions while you refuse to live the principles for which our institutions stand. For by doing this, you make doubly hard the work of teachers and leaders who are striving to carry the work on right lines. Clear the king's highway. Cease to block the way of the message he sends. I have been shown that the principles that were given us in the early days of the message are to be regarded as just as important by our people today as they were then. There are some who have never followed the light given us on the question of diet. It is time now to take the light from under the bushel and let it shine forth in clear, bright rays. I have been plainly instructed by the Lord that flesh meat should not be placed before the patients in our sanitarium dining rooms. Light was given me that the patients could have flesh meat if, after hearing the parlor lectures, they still urged us to give it to them, but that in such cases, it must be eaten in their own rooms. All the helpers are to discard flesh meat. But, as stated before, if, after knowing that the flesh of animals cannot be placed on the dining room tables, a few patients urge that they must have meat, cheerfully give it to them in their rooms.
Accustomed, as many are, to the use of flesh meat, it is not surprising that they should expect to see it on the sanitarium table. You may find it unadvisable to publish the bill of fare, giving a list of the food supplied at the table. For the absence of flesh meat from the dietary may seem a formidable obstacle to those who are thinking of becoming patrons of the sanitarium. Let the food be palatably prepared and nicely served. More dishes will have to be prepared than would be necessary if flesh meat was served. Other things can be provided so that meats can be discarded. Milk and cream can be used by some. Dr. Blank asked me if, under any circumstances, I would advise the drinking of chicken broth if one were sick and could not take anything else into the stomach. I said, there are persons dying of consumption who, if they ask for chicken broth, should have it. But I would be very careful. The example should not injure a sanitarium or make excuse for others to think their case required the same diet. I asked Dr. Blank if she had such a case in the sanitarium. She said, no, but I have a sister in the sanitarium at Blank who is very weak. She has weak sinking spells, but cooked chicken she can eat. I said, it would be best to remove her from the sanitarium. The light given me is that if the sister you mention would brace up and cultivate her taste for wholesome food, all these sinking spells would pass away. Counsels to Parents, Teachers, and Students, 127. Instruction has been given me that physicians who use flesh meats and prescribe it for their patients should not be employed in our institutions because they fail decidedly in educating the patients to discard that which makes them sick. The physician who uses and prescribes meat does not reason from cause to effect, and instead of acting as a restorer, he leads the patient by his own example to indulge perverted appetite. The physicians employed in our institutions should be reformers in this respect and in every other. Many of the patients are suffering because of errors in diet. They need to be shown the better way. But how can a meat-eating physician do this? By his wrong habits, he trammels his work and cripples his usefulness. Many of the patients in our sanitariums have reasoned out for themselves the question of meat eating, and desiring to preserve their mental and physical faculties from suffering, have left meat out of their dietary. Thus, they have obtained the relief from the ills which have tortured their lives. Many, not of our faith, have become health reformers because, from a selfish standpoint, they saw the consistency of doing this. Many have conscientiously taken their position on health reform in diet and dress.
Will Seventh-day Adventists continue to follow unhealthful practices? Will they not heed the injunction, "Whether therefore ye eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God"? The meat diet is the serious question. Shall human beings live on the flesh of dead animals? The answer, from the light that God has given, is no, decidedly no. Health reform institutions should educate on this question. Physicians who claim to understand the human organism ought not to encourage their patients to subsist on the flesh of dead animals. They should point out the increase of disease in the animal kingdom. The testimony of examiners is that very few animals are free from disease, and that the practice of eating largely of meat is contracting diseases of all kinds: cancers, tumors, scrofula, tuberculosis, and numbers of other like afflictions. If man will subsist on the food that God has so abundantly provided, without having it first pass into the animal organism and become sinew and muscle, and then take it second hand by eating of the corpse, his health would be much better insured. In Luke 4, verse 16 to 19, Christ announces his mission and work for the world. "And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and stood up for to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, 'The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord.'" Jesus himself became man's ransom, his liberator from the oppressive power of Satan. "Ye are not your own," he says, "for ye are bought with a price." We are bought from a power whose slaves we were, and the price our ransom cost was the only begotten Son of God. His blood alone could ransom guilty man. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth on him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Oh, if everyone could discern these matters as they have been presented to me. Those who are now so careless, so indifferent in regard to their character building. Those who plead for indulgence in a flesh-meat diet would never open their lips in justification of an appetite for the flesh of dead animals. Such a diet contaminates the blood in their veins and stimulates the lower animal passions. It enfeebles keen perception and vigor of thought to the understanding of God and the truth, and a knowledge of themselves. We are not to make the use of flesh meat a test, but we may and should consider the influence that professed believers who use flesh meat have over other churches. Those who use flesh meat disregard all the warnings that God has given concerning this question. They have no evidence that they are walking in safe paths. They have not the slightest excuse for eating the flesh of dead animals. God's curse is resting upon the animal creation. Many times when meat is eaten, it decays in the stomach and creates disease. Cancers, tumors, and pulmonary diseases are largely caused by meat eating. As God's messengers, shall we not bear a decided testimony against the indulgence of perverted appetite? Will those who claim to be ministers of the gospel, proclaiming the most solemn truth ever given to mortals, make the stomach a cesspool? God has provided an abundance of fruits and grains, which may be healthfully prepared and used in proper quantities. Why then do men continue to choose flesh meats?
Can we possibly have confidence in ministers who, at tables where flesh is served, join with others in eating it?
Ye shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God. Every one who transgresses the laws of health will surely be visited with God's displeasure.
Oh, how much of the Holy Spirit we might have day by day if we would walk circumspectly, denying self, and practicing the virtues of Christ's character.
Unpublished Testimonies, January 11, 1897. Healthful Living, 102:3.
Oh, if everyone could discern these matters as they have been presented to me. Those who are so careless, so indifferent in regard to their character building. Those who plead for indulgence in a flesh-meat diet would never open their lips in justification of an appetite for the flesh of dead animals. If we could be benefited by indulging the desire for flesh foods, I would not make this appeal to you, but I know we cannot. Flesh foods are injurious to the physical well-being, and we should learn to do without them. Those who are in a position where it is possible to secure a vegetarian diet, but who choose to follow their own preferences in this matter, eating and drinking as they please, will gradually grow careless of the instruction the Lord has given regarding other phases of the present truth, and will lose their perception of what is truth. They will surely reap as they have sown. I have been instructed that the students in our schools are not to be served with flesh foods or with food preparations that are known to be unhealthful. Nothing that will serve to encourage a desire for stimulants should be placed on the tables. I appeal to old and young and to middle-aged. Deny your appetite of those things that are doing you injury. Serve the Lord by sacrifice. Let the children have an intelligent part in this work. We are all members of the Lord's family, and the Lord would have his children, young and old, determined to deny appetite and to save the means needed for the building of meeting houses and the support of missionaries. I am instructed to say to parents, place yourselves, soul and spirit, on the Lord's side of this question. We need ever to bear in mind that in these days of probation, we are on trial before the Lord of the universe. Will you not give up indulgences that are doing you injury? Words of profession are cheap. Let your acts of self-denial testify that you will be obedient to the demands that God makes of his peculiar people. Then put into the treasury a portion of the means you save by your acts of self-denial, and there will be that with which to carry on the work of God. There are many who feel that they cannot get along without flesh foods, but if these would place themselves on the Lord's side, resolutely resolved to walk in the way of his guidance, they would receive strength and wisdom as did Daniel and his fellows. They would find that the Lord would give them sound judgment. Many would be surprised to see how much could be saved for the cause of God by acts of self-denial. The small sums saved by deeds of sacrifice will do more for the upbuilding of the cause of God than larger gifts will accomplish that have not called for denial of self.
Seventh-day Adventists are handling momentous truths. More than 40 years ago, the Lord gave us special light on health reform. But how are we walking in that light? How many have refused to live in harmony with the counsels of God? As a people, we should make advancement proportionate to the light received. It is our duty to understand and respect the principles of health reform. On the subject of temperance, we should be in advance of all other people. And yet, there are among us well-instructed members of the church and even ministers of the gospel who have little respect for the light that God has given upon this subject. They eat as they please and work as they please. We do not mark out any precise line to be followed in diet, but we do say that in countries where there are fruits, grains, and nuts in abundance,
flesh food is not the right food for God's people. I have been instructed that flesh food has a tendency to animalize the nature, to rob men and women of that love and sympathy which they should feel for everyone, and to give the lower passions control over the higher powers of the being. If meat eating were ever healthful, it is not safe now. Cancers, tumors, and pulmonary diseases are largely caused by meat eating. We are not to make the use of flesh food a test of fellowship, but we should consider the influence that professed believers who use flesh foods have over others. As God's messengers, shall we not say to the people, "Whether therefore ye eat or drink, or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God." 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31. Shall we not bear a decided testimony against the indulgence of perverted appetite? Will any who are ministers of the gospel, proclaiming the most solemn truth ever given to mortals, set an example in returning to the flesh pots of Egypt? Will those who are supported by the tithe from God's storehouse permit themselves by self-indulgence to poison the life-giving current flowing through their veins? Will they disregard the light and warnings that God has given them? The health of the body is to be regarded as essential for growth in grace and the acquirement of an even temper. If the stomach is not properly cared for, the formation of an upright moral character will be hindered. The brain and nerves are in sympathy with the stomach. Erroneous eating and drinking result in erroneous thinking and acting. All are now being tested and proved. We have been baptized into Christ, and if we will act our part by separating from everything that would drag us down and make us what we ought not to be, there will be given us strength to grow up into Christ, who is our living head, and we shall see the salvation of God.